Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, 806. It is Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo from the Built Ford Tough Studio on a Monday morning. I was going to move into some other stuff with football, but people are calling in about these crazy moments like on the playing field or on the ice or something like that. And you said something during the break. You were talking, and you've got some other ones, too, we'll get to. But you mentioned, you know, some crazy things happen, and these crazy hot dog nights. And you made me think of, how about this one? And this, I think Eddie would remember more than any of us. And I don't remember if it was Chicago or Cleveland or Detroit. Remember the whole thing with the Bee Gees and disco night?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where was that? Was that
Chicago?
Cleveland?
It was Chicago. Comiskey.
Comiskey. Are you aware of that?
No. You said Bee Gees night? Like the group?
Well, the people like got tired of, I don't know exactly what the circumstances
was. It was Death to Disco night.
Yes. And everybody brought their albums. They
threw them on the field.
And it turned into a riot, and they were burning
nuts.
Them. It was a disaster.
Crazy. Why did it turn into a riot?
Because people started just hating on disco and throwing things on the field. And
they were throwing albums on the field.
Yeah, yeah.
I love disco.
That's crazy.
But that's another one that, like,
I remember the clip the comes in my mind. I remember seeing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. So, and then you had one other one. What?
I had a couple. As we went to break, I was thinking about the iconic fights the Knicks had. Remember Jeff Van Gundy wrapped around Alonzo Mourning's, with the Heat, wrapped around Alonzo Mourning's leg, and I said to you, he had the comb over, and the comb over was flapping back and forth, and it was great because you see, like, Oak and those guys was looking at, like, what are you doing? This is what we do. This is not what you do. But just, and I remember being a kid, like, that's my team. Yeah. We even got the coach fighting for us. You know what I mean? Like, that certain moments in sports or certain moments with your fandom kind of cements it. And that was one of the moments that I remember, like, that's why I loved the Knicks.
And then the other one you brought up was Antonio Brown walking off the field taking his jersey off.
I was in the studio with me and Bar Scott, and then the Bucs were on the field going against the Jets, and Antonio Brown was like, I'm done with this, takes off his pad and jersey. While Brady's trying to get the guys, you know, his guys together, Antonio Brown, his star receiver, is running right behind him. By the way, who he, like, pretty much clove and fed during his time in Tampa.
I know.
So it felt so surreal. And so those are moments, like, I'm just like, man, sports is wild.
Oh, it's wild, all right. Got a bunch of calls, actually, on this. Harry and Clifton. What's up, Harry?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, how are you?
Breath of fresh air listening to you guys.
That's nice.
My incident is from the late 70s. Rick Monday, a fan tried to get onto the field and light the American flag on fire. Rick Monday ran over, grabbed the flag out of the fan's hand, and, you know, saved it, obviously.
Okay. Was that in Los Angeles?
Yeah, that was in Los Angeles.
Wow. That's a good one, Harry. That's one that I've
never heard.
Don't know that I've ever seen that one. I don't know. That doesn't ring a bell. I'm familiar with Rick Monday, obviously, but that one, that's a new one for me. Brian in Northport, what's up, Brian?
Hey, Jerry. How you doing, Willie?
Hey, how you doing?
So I got two that are completely opposite ends of the spectrum. One is, do you remember Nancy Kerrigan getting clubbed by the competitor's attacker?
Yes. But now remind me, that didn't happen on the ice, right? That was
backstage.
It was like in the hallway or something.
That's what it was.
The other is, and a lot of people don't consider it a sport, and I do and always will, is Dale Earnhardt dying in the Daytona 500.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the crash. Yeah, that's that one.
I mean, that.
That one, though, Brian, so that one more falls in line with, and that's a good one, that falls in line more with, like, you know, horrible injuries and things of that nature. You know, the way this started was more the chaos that can ensue outside of the game, within the game.
Yep.
You know, that, yes. You know, it's so interesting about that. Eddie's not here, but he would remember really well about this. So this radio station has never really discussed NASCAR. It's not our audience. NASCAR, while arguably one of the most popular sports in this country, no question about it, not here, not in New York. It's just not.
Agree.
It has its fans. I'm not saying it doesn't, But it's not like if you go down to North Carolina, it's almost every that in college football is everything.
Yeah, college football in the South in race in NASCAR is what it is.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's a religion.
So we don't really talk about it. Like even the Daytona 500, we don't talk about every year or ever. This radio station, for I would say, and I really wish he was here because he would remember better. I would say the better part of almost a full week was nonstop NASCAR calls.
Oh, wow.
I remember people calling in, talking about the braces they wear and the headgear they have and the dangers involved. And it was incredible because none of us knew what in the hell we were talking about. It was more just allowing the listeners and the NASCAR fans to call in and discuss it and give their opinions. And I feel like we got educated about it, but it was amazing to me how much it took over this radio station for how long it did.
Will it ever happen again?
I hope not. I don't want to see anybody die on the race car. Or you mean no, take over the radio station?
Yes, I don't want anybody to die. I mean, like, will there ever be an avenue where the fans can come back and like spill their guts about how much they love NASCAR?
Well, maybe, but I was going to say, like, if you had, like, we don't really discuss the WNBA all that much. We do, but not that much. You could have an instance with the WNBA where we get flooded with calls about it for sure.
Yeah, unfortunately, we only talk about it when they're flying dildos. That
has been the case lately.
It's the only time we've ever talked about it.
Well, Caitlin Clark, Angel, we've talked some, but sadly, that is true. That has been the conversation this season. Case or Casey in High Point, what's up, man? How you doing?
Good morning, guys. Maybe you mentioned it. I think it was that the female tennis player, early 90s. Remember when she got stabbed on the court?
Yeah. We did. Monica Seles. We did mention that one.
Yeah, and then the other one, too. Just there's a lot of that fan interference with baseball and stuff. Yeah. But locally, the Giants Chargers, early 90s, when you know the entire stadium just pegging snowballs. You know, they had to stop the game for that one.
You're right. You're right about that. Yes, at the Meadowlands. I do remember that. That's right. And I think I'd have to go back and look. I want to say Ray Handley was the coach of the Giants at that time. I might have the year confused, but I feel like Ray Handley was the coach. And that was a bizarre scene, too, on the field. And you've had that happen in Philly, too, with the snowballs being thrown.
Yeah, they pegged
Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Yes, right. That's what I knew.
Philly was a different town if you beat up Santa.
It's a different town. That was the headline. Like, they hate Santa. Chris in Bayshore. What's up, Chris?
Hey, what's up, Jerry? What about Mike Milbury and the Boston Bruins versus the New York Rangers?
Was that when Milbury went into the stands and was fighting the crowd?
Yeah.
It was, right?
Into the stands. Yeah, with his skates on.
With his skates on.
Yeah, that's a good one, too. Yep. Yeah, that's Chris, thanks for checking in. That is a good. So there's a lot of them. I mean, I picked the five that came to mind immediately.
I know.
It's amazing the more you talk to people, how many of these crazy things have transpired. And still, to me, nothing beats the Malice. Nothing beats the Pistons one. Nothing.
No, I mean, the Malice in the Palace just felt like anarchy.
That's why nothing.
Like, we watched Ron Artest square up a fan and sock him in the face.
Like,
we saw Steven Jackson.
The crowd.
Yeah, we saw Steven Jackson and Jermaine O'Neal. Like, they were in the crowd just picking people off. Like, that was nuts. That felt like we were watching WWF.
I remember coming in because I think that was a Friday night. I could be wrong, but I think it was a Friday night. And I'm almost certain I was either doing updates driving in that morning at like 4 o'clock in the morning, or I was running the board. I don't remember. But I remember we're making a big deal. Something, a few guys got into a fight, not thinking it was that big a deal at all. Yeah. I couldn't believe that our radio station in New York was leading with Pacers Pistons, right?
I think so. Yeah,
it was Pacers Pistons. And I'm like, well, what do we?
Was that the turn? And maybe you know because you're more in the weeds with basketball. Was that the turn of the culture of the NBA? Because there was so long how the players were dressing, and they seemed urban and thuggish and all that nonsense. Then the fight happened, and then Stern was like, all right, we got to put these guys in suits to kind of was that a long?
It could be. I honestly don't know. I don't know where that line would be. Great job by CBS Sports Network. Rasheed Wallace coming up with the photos very quickly. But yeah, and then when I got in, and I get into the station, and I see on the TV, I see the highlights, I'm like, whoa. I'm like, now I see why we're leading with this story. This is a big deal.
It was nuts.
It was crazy.
We're not talking about like two teams just scrapping. I mean, they were knocking out pedestrians.
Yeah. For sure.
Like fans were getting knocked out.
I got to be honest with you. I'm surprised more of this doesn't happen even today with the way fans are now and how vocal fans are and personal too, in some cases.
Well, yeah, I mean, because sports betting is so big, more people are entrenched to the sports, right?
Yeah,
they're now more. Not that they didn't care, but now it's like money is literally on the line, so they feel like they have an attachment to the player.
Which is also why I think prop betting needs to go away.
Okay.
I do. The betting's fine. But this betting in sports, when you're betting on specific players, that's where it really starts to get personal. And I think a lot of these guys get these death threats and all sorts of crazy stuff.
I've definitely gotten hate mail for sure.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah, I don't think there's a guy that hasn't played professional sports and never received some type of hate mail.
Here's Brian in Sayreville. What's up, Brian?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How are we doing?
Good, how are you?
Morning.
All right, man. I just wanted to bring up the time, and I think it was 88 or 89 when Clint Malarchuk took a skate to the throat.
To the throat and was bleeding on the ice.
Yes, the large pool of maroon just pummeling out. And I remember being a child. I'd watched hockey since I was a young kid. I remember being a child watching that happen and transpire right in front of me. I just thought it was a really crazy, you know, not really driven by chaos or anarchy like the Malice of Palace or anything like that. But, I mean, it was such a scene that, something I'll never forget for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I, Brian, very good one, because that one, you want to talk about, like, being terrified watching it for the guy.
Yeah, I think that was I don't remember that, but I remember seeing the clip of that. I think for me, and from a football standpoint, it is recent, unfortunately, is DeMar Hamlin.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I remember like having guys who played long time in the NFL, like having conversations with them, talking about how they were, because of that one situation. Mind you, we have seen, if you play football long enough, you've seen some really horrific incidents on the field.
Joe Theismann. Everyone refers to that.
But DeMar Hamlin's situation felt, I think, for every guy that played the game and now have kids, it was an honest conversation that they had to have with themselves, like, man, that could be my kid.
Yeah.
And we really had to kind of look at ourselves in the mirror, like, man, do we really want our kids to do this? Like, I know more and more guys right now, because of that one situation and how the world just kind of like paused, now started pushing their kids towards baseball. You know, now I started pushing their kids to.
You know what the problem with that is? It can happen. I mean, baseball, you take a line drive 100%, off the head if you're pitching.
100%. I agree.
Box.
But I think in the magnitude we saw it.
Sure.
And they have that clip of his mom running down the stadium stairs onto the field. I remember they were reporters outside the hospital. Like that whole, for like a month or two. We were all like, we paused, right? And I think that was...
They stopped playing. Like, they didn't play the rest of the game.
Yeah. And so I remember there was just like a moment in time I remember... Because I had to jump on SNY and talk about it.
Yeah.
And I remember Ryan Clark, my ex-teammate, him being on ESPN, having an emotional... Him and Van Pelt had this emotional back and forth. Like, multiple analysts and people who either played or in the know really kind of had like this coming to Jesus moment because of DeMar Hamlin.
No doubt. And I talk about, again, Stanton getting back in the batter's box. The fact that he's still playing is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, such a physical sport where that could happen anytime again. One more before the break. Kevin in Jackson. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, guys. Nice talking. The 1974, I'm a little older than you guys, the Cleveland Indians did a beer promotion, 10-cent beers.
Yeah.
It ended up, there was a riot in the stands. They poured onto the field, and the Cleveland Indians actually forfeited the game, and the Texas Rangers won it.
Really?
And as punishment, I think now you have to pay, I think, $15 for a beer. So
right.
That is very true. It is not cheap to get a beer these days.
Imagine if you're like the Dodgers or Padres or somebody, you have tequila night.
No, I couldn't. No.
Can you imagine if a beer night equals a riot, what would tequila night equal?
Let me
mass
say
murders.
This.
Would it be the Purge at a ballpark?
You've had some pretty bad brawls in L.A. when the Giants and the Dodgers get together. Maybe even the Padres and the Dodgers. That I wouldn't want to see.
You talk about brawls. See what happens when the Niners and Raider fans get together.
Yeah, I believe it. I'm not. That's why.
Like, you talk about fan bases that like don't fool with each other. They don't fool with each other. Like it's like Hatfields and McCoys type action.
I believe
it's aggressive.
I believe it.
So
that's why, as much as you know, you can rag on New York from different parts of the country. We don't usually have those issues here. We really haven't.
You won't see a Jets and Giants brawl in a parking lot.
It's rare. They it's do rare. Happen, but it is rare.
But it's always like it's my cousin versus the neighbor's cousin, like type fight. It's not like two towns meeting
right
to get after each other. It's not. That's not it.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Hi, coming in from the Built for Tough studio, Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo. I'd never anticipated the amount of reaction to this as we have gotten in terms of just chaotic moments. Again, on the playing field.
On the playing field, Jerry.
And things that kind of went beyond. So, let's see. My guy Ken from the Marlboro Police Department talks about the Rangers and Bruins. We talked about that with Mike Milbury. Pete Bellotti bringing up Tyson Holyfield. Yes, we did that one already. And Bob Gill brought up one. I got to be honest. I'm embarrassed as a baseball fan. I don't know this one.
Okay. Bob always has good stuff.
Yeah. I don't know how I don't know this one. Because I wasn't alive. Johnny Roseborough and Juan Marichal.
Oh, I wouldn't have known that one.
So, that's what'd you say? Say it on the air.
I think it's Bob and Greenwich. It's either him or Steve.
Okay, let's flip a coin. Let's go Bob and Greenwich. All right. Your heads. What's up, Bob?
Good morning, Jerry. I was watching the I'm a Cowboys fan. I was watching the Bears and the Lions in 71, and there was an image that after the game, during the game and after the game, that made it look like Dick Butkus killed Chuck Hughes, which he didn't. It was the angle of the photography, and that picture became spread throughout the nation before social media.
Hmm.
Dicka kills. Who was it? Dicka and who?
Dick Butkus. He was actually he was actually about 20 yards in the background, but the way it looked from the angle, it looked like he was almost standing over him, like as if he had applied the hit.
Hmm. Well, and that's also from the time when, you know, NFL films and the big hits, that was a selling point for the league.
Right.
You nailed that one, Fleek.
Sorry. Who is Butkus and who?
I don't know. All right. Steve, are we sure now?
100%, yeah.
All right, before we get to
We have it. We've also got to mention...
what's that?
Don Zimmer and Pedro Martinez.
Yeah. Yes, that's a good one, too. Yeah. Steven Ewart, what's up? Yo, Steve.
Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Back around 65 or 66, Juan Marichal, during an at-bat, turned around and started smacking Johnny Roseborough over the head with his back. Kopech had to come in and break it up.
Unbelievable.
During that bat. During a game, yeah.
How?
I was about 9 or 10 years old.
What were the circumstances? Were they chirping back and forth and he just had enough? Or what was that?
I think that's what it was. You know, it's hard to remember back then. I'm going to be 69.
Right.
So, it fades a little, you know, but it was like a game of the week because it was Koufax against Marichal.
Yeah. And that's what happened. Wow, that is unbelievable. I don't know. Again, I'm embarrassed that I don't
know
that.
Pull up the footage real quick.
That is unreal that he hit him in the head with the bat. We talked about the Piazza. And another good one would be Piazza and Clemens.
I thought about that too, yeah.
And you think about that scene and throwing the sawed-off bat towards Piazza. Like, that's crazy. This dude hit him in the head.
Like, sawed off bat is
nuts.
I mean, that's nuts.
I was that was like an arrow.
But didn't Clemens also like he didn't mean to, or he was just tossing it away? Didn't he say that?
Are you really going to go with that?
I'm not defending him. I'm just trying
to. The bat was the ball.
Yeah,
which then you would throw the ball.
It's even better to throw the ball at a guy. Right. Neither one makes any sense. He lost his mind and he did something stupid. That's all he has to say.
Here's a still image. I mean, I guess there was some footage, but it's a little grainy. But yeah, like bats overhead and people having to come out and break it up. So yeah,
60 years ago.
There's a little bit.
You actually have the video.
A little bit.
The film.
Yeah,
that is pretty wild.
Old school.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's chaotic, and there are bats being held over heads, that's for sure.
Anyway, that was from Bob Gelb. He was the one that brought that up and sent me the text.
I was getting ready out there, so I don't hear all the ones that were brought up. Pedro and Zimmer, certainly. What about Yankees-Orioles? I think it was 98 when Benitez plunked Tino Martinez, and it set off.
Yeah, Darryl, because Darryl went into the Orioles dugout.
Joe Torre had to basically pull him out of there, but that was pretty wild.
That was pretty good, too. Yeah, there's
Graham,
a lot of
Graham
them.
Lloyd comes running out of the bullpen trying to take a swing at Benitez. That was
a lot of good. That is another good one. Yeah. So there you have it. That took up a lot more time than I actually thought it would, so it's kind of cool.
All right.
All right, Chris, time is yours.
Eddie, if you could put me back up for when we get started here, I got some other stuff for you from Yankees Red Sox over the weekend. Beyond last night's 7-2 Yankees win to salvage the finale and avoid a four-game sweep. How about the scene Friday night at the stadium? So, Jerry, you've got bats at your house now. Squirrel got loose on the field for a bit, interrupting the game abruptly.
Squirrel nearly hit Garcia's cleat, and now it's running out to the mound near Max Fried.
Got a squirrel in the mound, folks. And he's a New York squirrel because he's taking his time and... Yeah, I'm here. What are you going to do about it?
So putting up a little bit of a front, Emmanuel Barbari, Dave Sims got into squirrel play-by-play mode for a little bit.
My goodness, got a squirrel here at the stadium.
A very discerning squirrel. He's found a couple of scraps. He's getting after it.
Yeah, he's nibbling on the infield dirt.
Yeah, we're going right at Ben Rice. Ben showed a little quicks, backed off.
And took a little bit before they were able to get back to game action.
Does everyone just wait for the squirrel to leave?
Well, he's got to get a standing O. Or a partial standing up. Tell you what, you don't want to mess with them bad boys.
Yeah, that's about all the action the Yankee fan got that night.
Exactly right.
That's the only problem. You got to treat those things, those animals, with care. Because if you don't, I mean, you get the people coming for you.
PETA.
Yeah.
Yeah, they come after you. You don't want that.
I would chuck that squirrel into the third. I would do it up in the stands.
That's why people against the ethical treatment of animals.
PETA King. All right, so that was Friday night. 1-0 Red Sox win as Brian Bello outdueled Fried. Then you got Saturday's 12-1 blowout behind Garrett Crochet for Boston. So at that point, three straight losses for the Yanks in the series, 8 in a row to the Red Sox overall, which left Aaron Judge with this response.
I feel like I've been saying this since opening day. You know, you're going to say it every year. You'll ask me next year about the same thing, and I'll tell you after a couple tough losses that we got to play better. That's what it comes down to. Coaches can't fix that. Fans can't fix that. Media can't fix that. It's the players in this room.
Now, Jerry, I know you pointed this out start of the show. You know, Judge hasn't been hitting since he's come back from the IL. 2-for-14 in the series. And really since the All-Star game, which was before the IL stint with the elbow, he's hitting .193. And the power numbers have been down. Batting average has come down. OPS has come down. So they got to get him going down the stretch rest of the way.
But good news is it's August. It's not September or October.
Exactly right.
He needs to get going.
Sunday night, though, the home run bats did return.
Breaking ball. High fly ball. Right field. Looking up Garcia. He's done it again. Trent Gresham, everybody, with his second home run tonight. 25th of the season. It's a 5-0 New York lead.
Dave Sims here on the Fan. 2 for Trent Grisham, 2 for Jazz Chisholm Jr. Numbers 100 and 101 of his career as the Yankees got that 7-2 victory. Carlos Rodon, 5 2/3, just one hit, but couldn't get through the sixth as some walks got him into some trouble. 5 total for the outing as he was lifted in place of Luke Weaver, who did give up a couple of hits and a couple of runs were plated, charged to Rodon, but Weaver and Devin Williams combined for 7 outs, 5 strikeouts. Williams,
you feeling more comfortable with Williams?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, this was the first game he pitched in a while where the Yankees had the lead, and it was in the late innings. But yes, in the non-closer's role this season, if you go back to the beginning of the year, right, he didn't pitch well out of the gate, and they flip-flopped him with Weaver, and he kind of found himself a little bit, and he went back to the closer's role. It didn't go so well, so
I thought maybe the Tampa game, I know he pitched himself into trouble, but that was also the 10th inning, was it not? That was the 10th inning. He started with the guy on second base.
Right, that's the one unearned run he's allowed in his last 6 or 7 appearances.
And then to strike out the side in sequence the way he did, to me, showed a lot of guts. It's been a tough season for him,
for sure. But if he finds him, carves out a role here in the 7th and 8th innings, you know, they've got Bednar on the back end. Weaver, we know, can close. We've seen that if they need to in a pinch. So he can still think, I think, be part of the solution, just maybe not the guy at the very back end of the bullpen the way they envisioned when they made the trade for him in the offseason. So they get the finale. They're even with the Red Sox in the loss column, so technically second of the three wild card spots. It's tight there in the American League. The Nationals come in now, 3-game interleague series. You got Cam Schlittler and Brad Lord in tonight's opener with coverage at 6:25 here on The Fan and the free Odyssey app. Really don't have much for you audio-wise on the Mets as they came up short to the Braves down in Atlanta, 4-3, not able to complete the sweep. Left a couple of runners aboard in the ninth with a chance to tie or go ahead. Now they're back home to face the Phillies tonight at Citi Field. You got Kodai Senga, Christopher Sanchez, And the Mets are still a game and a half up on the Reds for that final wild card spot in the NL. Cincinnati dropping 2 out of 3 in Arizona over the weekend, but they did win on Sunday. All right, I'm going to take you to Miami. Marlins beat the Blue Jays 5-3 in that series finale. 27-year-old reliever Tyler Phillips nailed down the save for Miami. Now, this is his first full season in the big leagues. Had a little cup of coffee with the Phillies last year. Very interesting entrance from the bullpen. So he's got not one of these guys, but like a signature song. The lights don't go out. There's not flashing lights and fireworks and all that. He slaps himself in the face.
I know this guy.
As
yes.
you'll see here. So, all right, so you're familiar with this a little bit.
I am.
Here he comes out, and you're going to see it on CBS Sports Network. And three hard slaps to his right cheek. Oh, the lights do go out. I apologize. So I guess there you go. That's everybody does that now. But before the lights go out, three hard slaps to the face, runs in from the bullpen. So an interesting character as heard in this post-game interview exchange on Marlins Radio yesterday.
All right, Jack, thank you very much. Tyler, you threw 32 pitches yesterday. When did you know you were going in tonight?
When they called down.
And you were ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready. They called down, I'm pissed off, I'm ready to go.
Why do you get so pissed off?
I don't like hitters.
How did you get through that 9?
Throw the ball over the plate.
How long does it take you to cool down after a win?
I never cool down.
And the slapping, what was the level of slapping when you came on?
Pretty hard. My face is hot. Yeah.
Very short and to the point.
I mean, this guy, my face is hot.
Yeah.
I mean,
he did give.
I mean, he was cranking on himself a little
bit.
He was,
yes. Now, he did give a couple of normal answers after that. Just thought, you know, the guy, I think the interviewer panicked a little. Well, how important was it to get the win? Well, it's always important to win, you know?
No, I know.
But then.
He would have gave himself a concussion there. That would have been awesome.
Well, is it any different than, you know, football players that, you know, headbutt each other with helmets on?
Yes. Yeah, but people that. There's a science to it. You don't try to knock your teammate out. Like, you can butt heads and do it aggressively without.
Who was the Redskins quarterback that gave himself a concussion?
Gus Frerotte.
Broke his neck.
Right. But he did that against
Wall. Yeah. I think it was
dumb.
A padded wall. But
it was
still,
a padded wall.
Yeah. Didn't work out.
Talk about iconic moments in sports.
That guy wasn't given the protocols.
Yeah. Here was the end of that interview.
Great win. You're scaring me. Go to the clubhouse. Thank you very much.
And he didn't say anything to the guy. He just walked off.
You're scary.
Tremendous.
My face is hot.
At least he played into it. You know, that's funny. With I don't like hitters.
No, that's pretty good.
Tremendous. That all right, funny. Tommy Fleetwood finally gets his first PGA Tour win. Turned out it was the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup champion, along with the $10 million prize that comes with it at East Lake after many close calls. Here he was after his round, a 3-shot victory over Patrick Cantlay, and I don't know who came in second. It doesn't matter.
I'm proud of what I've done before. You know, whether I've won or not, I've still been proud of my career and where I've been so far, knowing that I still have a long way to go and a lot to learn. And this doesn't change that, really. This is just hopefully one win, the first of many to come.
Nice added refreshing.
Translate that for us, Willie.
Don't have a shrimp on a bobby.
I didn't even understand what he said the first 5 seconds.
Oh, you didn't? No?
No.
I'm proud of what I've done before. You know, whether I've won or not, I've still been proud of.
Proud of what I've done before, whether I've won or not.
Oh, won. I thought he said pawn.
No, he did not say
I don't know
whether he's won or not.
I struggled with that one.
I mentioned Patrick Cantlay, who was his playing partner. I don't know if you're a Cantlay. I can't stand him. He drives me nuts.
Okay.
I don't know. He just gives off this, like, he takes forever
to
hit the ball. So I don't know who this guy is. This is Jason Page, who's some sort of media type. But interesting, we kind of had the same feeling. He basically videoed himself talking over, watching on TV. And he goes, if you watch closely, you can actually see the grass growing beneath Cantlay's feet. And then he had this to say as he was standing over the ball off one of the tee boxes.
Watch how many waggles and re-grips from this guy. It's just unwatchable. It's positively unwatchable. If I had to play with somebody like this for 18 holes, I'd scream. I'd throw a tee at him. I'd throw a ball at him. I'd throw something at him. It's just unwatchable.
You know, when you're playing with a slow player.
Yeah.
And they get to the end of the round, and Fleetwood wins, and he goes into the scorer's table there. He's sitting next to Cantlay, and they had the ISO shot on the two of them. And this same guy goes, the positively miserable look on Patrick Cantlay's face makes the whole afternoon worthwhile. Such an insufferable human being. I hope Tommy takes as long going over the scorecard as Cantlay did standing over each shot.
I get it. You know, there's a guy, you know, Victor Hovland.
Yeah.
I think he's a fabulous player. Him putting? Yeah. Oh, my God.
I feel like he's developed, not the yips, but like he's gotten in his head this year with some of his swing stuff, and the putting's always been an issue for him.
But that's why they put these guys on the clock. It takes two. Yeah. Like, let's go.
Yes.
Move it along. What was the tournament? There was a six-hour round. Was it like a month ago?
Some of them are the roughs.
You golf every day. Do you get anxious?
Oh, beyond anxious.
Yeah, he doesn't.
Let's go. See the ball hit the
Even
ball.
If a guy's not hitting the ball well, you just like, pick your ball up. Let's go.
Well, I don't care for if you're on shot 9 on a par 4. Like, you suck. Let's go.
Once you get to 7 or 8,
let's move on.
Hole 1, you're on the clock with Jerry.
I'm not that bad. But
so you're my anxious
golfer. Sometimes, don't you play like sub 3-hour rounds sometimes at your place?
Sub 3 hours. Yes, but that's not because we're playing that fast. It's a small course. There's no one out there.
Still, you got to be moving.
It shouldn't take that hours.
3 hours.
3 hours.
And
two people. No, come on.
You're like that guy who's by himself on a Sunday on the PGA Tour. He's dead last. He tees off first with a marker. And it's like, how fast can I get this round done and get the hell out of here?
I'm not rushing to. No. See, I'm not rushing to get it done, but I do think you play with pace. Yeah. Otherwise, it's boring for everybody.
And Willie, he walks too.
I do. I ride the cart sometimes. I much prefer to walk the course.
If you got to, say you got to force them in front of you, and you're moving and you feel like, you know, they're slowing you up, are you together?
Oh, no, you got to deal with it. No.
Oh, I didn't know if you tap a couple guys and show like, hey, guys, you know, can I either play through or.
No, what I will usually do, if we're only two and we're following a foursome, I will skip a hole rather than I'm not going to ruin there or ask them. I'll just jump to the next hole. If you know,
but you ask
open.
For permission, right?
Usually just buzz by. Hey, we're just going to skip the hole, guys.
No, because I remember I golfed somewhere down south, and there was a bunch of older gentlemen behind us, and they were annoyed. I guess we weren't playing fast enough, and they kind of just drove by us.
Yeah,
but when we moved up, they were still on the box. We were like, well, we assumed you moved ahead because you were playing fast,
like,
but
let's
you
guys go.
Right,
but now we're waiting on you.
Now that's my point.
Yeah,
no, and that's rude.
And they kind of gave us this scoff, why are you talking?
No, that's rude.
Something Patrick
that you can't do. If you're going to move past people, move. You should never see them again.
100%. Yes.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, we will see you next time.
Yeah.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable 6-blade shaves, swift rinse and 4 blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, 8:53. It is Willie and Jerry for Boomer and Geo. This topic is taken off, so we will just continue with it for a few more minutes.
Play the hits, Jerry.
I'm playing the hits.
Play the hits.
Nick and Roslyn is the hit here. What's up, Nick?
Hey, guys. Good morning. Hope you guys are well.
Yes, how are you?
Doing good. The craziest thing I've ever seen, and God only knows why, I was watching the Royals at the White Sox.
Wow.
I believe it was in the early 2000s. The early 2000s. A father and son, they must have been strung out of their minds, jumped onto the field and just started beating up the first base coach of the Royals.
Really?
And, I believe the gentleman, both teams came out running from the dugout, and you know what happened. They started beating on the father and the son. I believe they were father and son. They were beating the crap out of him, but I believe the first base coach either lost vision in one eye or lost his hearing. I remember it vividly. It was the most insane thing I've ever seen.
Nick, that's another one. I have no recollection of that at all. In early 2000s.
Can you imagine if that was a thing?
No, it's not a thing. That should not be a thing. And if that did happen, they should be banned from every U.S. stadium and venue in this country. That's nuts. Mike in Myrtle Beach. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Morning.
I'm pretty good. I can't believe you guys and your listeners are missing the parachute guy in the 1986 World Series.
No, I referenced it before when Willie was talking about the fight. Yes.
Yeah, Rick Bowe and Evander Holyfield.
I mentioned the guy that came in with the Red Sox and the Mets in the World Series. So I did. We kind of glanced through it, but we did mention that. The same way I had people, you know, texting me about other things that I had mentioned early on. Eddie mentioned Cal Stanford after I had mentioned Cal Stanford. So we did get to that one. Ed in Woodhaven, what's up, Ed?
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
Calling about the, in 95, after the strike season in baseball, the opening day was the Mets opened on a Friday night. And got the fans all lathered up, all feeling good, and people started running on the field. In the early part of the game, three guys ran onto the field and ran to second base. and they threw dollar bills up in the air with shirts, T-shirts that said greed on there. And it was the dollar bills were how many days the strike lasted. They threw that up in the air. But that was the start of it. They wound up, people were running on the field after that all night long. And one of them, they ran, they grabbed third base, and the security's about to grab them. They throw it into the stands, and now the stands start throwing it up into the box seats, going up about 10 rows. And, you know, people, the crowd's going crazy every time somebody ran up the field. Some heavy set guy runs up the field. No way he's getting over center field wall. He starts running. The crowd is going nuts as he's doing it. He's getting about a foot off the ground, not even a foot, 2 inches off the ground. But people are running all over. They had no control of the game. There was probably 10 or 12 times people were running on the field. And I said, okay, this is what they get for having that strike season. Yeah. They're going to have a long time to get this back.
Welcome back. That is some scene.
That's the craziest thing about fans running on the field. I always think to myself when I see that, because it happens.
Yeah, it still happens.
Throughout sports. Yeah. What's the end game?
Well, I'll tell you, there was a girl that ran on the field. I think it was in L.A. last week. And she's got, I think, 1 million TikTok followers. Mm. And she did it live. Like, she live streamed it. And she ended up in jail for 6 hours. And I guess the end game there is gain more subscribers and become viral and famous. I don't know. But for other people, I don't know.
Yeah. Like, you're going to get caught.
And they don't show it on TV anymore either.
You're right. Because that was a thing. They used to stop the game. You could see the guy. I remember the iconic one in Pittsburgh is when a fan ran on the field. I think it was in Cleveland. And James Harrison came behind a guy.
And decked the guy.
He powerbombed.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And threw him on the floor. And fans was like, yeah!
Yeah, absolutely. It's stupid. The one iconic moment, and
not to cut you off, I do think players should stay out of it. Let security handle that.
And they do for the most part. Yeah. But when James Harrison did that, that was awesome.
That was awesome. Agreed.
The one, this is not a crazy moment on the field or anything, but you brought up, you know, President Bush throwing out the first pitch after 9/11.
That was big.
In the World Series against, that was a moment. You know, Piazza's home run against the Braves, all of that. Yeah. But when Bush went out there, I mean, my God, was that a moment.
The place erupted.
And then if you've ever watched the documentary, the short pieces they've done on that, the amount of, like, you know, protection he had on underneath the jacket with the vest.
Yeah, didn't he have a vest? He did wear a vest, right?
Like an armor of heavy, they said. And he was, and still threw a strike of all strikes, which was pretty cool.
It's talking about protection. I got privy to the information when I was with the Jets. I didn't realize how many snipers are actually at the stadium on game day. You don't see. I mean, obviously you can't see them. But
the only time I ever noticed was when we went to San Francisco for the Super Bowl that was in Santa Clara. I guess it was Super Bowl 50.
Okay.
All right. My hotel, and it was one of the big media hotels we were staying in. I remember I got there, I put my stuff down, and I opened the drapes to kind of look to see what my sight lines were. I'm like, okay, there's the water, and there's a bell. Like, what is that? Mm. And there were two or three snipers on the roof of the building next door. I was like, whoa. And it was eye-opening. They were there the next day. So clearly the NFL wants to make sure everybody's safe, and they're like, I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Yeah, I've seen them, like, coming into, when I was with the Jets, coming into the stadium, man, and you see those guys pull up. I mean, they're not pulling up with, like, no handguns. They're pulling up with those big boys, and, like, and they disappear.
Yeah,
like,
you can't.
Like, I've been warming up, and I've looked into the stands. You don't see them, but they're there.
And make sure you're safe.
Thank you.
And I'm during the break, I want to see, because I took a photo of it, because I couldn't believe it when I was seeing it. I didn't think that happened. And, you know, I understood around the stadium, sure, maybe where the players were staying, but, like, the media hotel?
Mm.
I couldn't believe it. It was pretty eye-opening, actually. So, boy, we got a lot of...
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.